you everyone for coming. It's great to see so many familiar faces here, and it's pretty early, so we really appreciate you showing support for the event. I'm going to talk about the UK, obviously. Anyone with even a passing understanding of UK gambling regulation will be aware that the industry is suffering something of an assault at the moment on a number of fronts. There's investigations, there's consultations, there's reviews, there's ministerial statements, and an array of negative media. Now, originally, my talk was going to be a bit of a cook's tour of all of these regulatory initiatives, but when I've been planning the talk, I felt a theme going to emerge. Now, we all know the industry is evolving, but crucially, so it would appear, is the Commission. And it can be difficult to see what the Commission is actually evolving into. At the same time as I was preparing my talk a couple of weeks ago, the Commission published a consultation document, which was designed to update their approach to enforcement, their enforcement strategy. But within that document, the regulator is also seeking to update the principles that underline their entire regulatory scope. So in this talk today, I'm going to focus on a number of recent statements and quotes from the Gambling Commission and indeed other authorities to try and understand where they're all coming from and where they're trying to take us. And consider the complexity of some of the changes that the regulator is imploring the industry to make. And I'm going to consider the fundamental purpose of gambling regulation. The relatively new CEO of the Gambling Commission, Sarah Harrison, gave a pretty impressive speech in November at a conference attended by many of the Gambling Commission's licensees and other stakeholders. She implored the industry to quicken the pace of change, which is a phrase repeated more than once since that conference by the Gambling Commission herself and some of her colleagues. As indicated in the quote, the Commission has identified a number of key areas for improvement. What's notable is that a number of these key areas, such as advertising, money laundering, consumer protection, actually sit outside the Gambling Commission's direct statutory remit and are overseen by other regulatory bodies or authorities. As such, while the Commission has a role to ensure that its licensees comply with general laws and regulations, it's the ASA, the Advertising Standards Authority, the Competition and Markets Authority, and for the Process of Crime Act and Police, that actually have the primary duty to pursue the industry if it fails. The Commission's position as a regulator is clear. The industry is falling short and a rapid improvement is needed. And as we now see, the CMA and indeed the Information Commissioner are each investigating the industry currently. So it's clear that other regulators also feel intervention is needed. The Commission's November speech contains statements such as this one that suggested the Commission welcomed a relationship with its licensees and promoted a general spirit of openness and cooperation. Of course, any regulator, gambling or otherwise, needs to have a discursive and open relationship with its charges. And at a time when the regulator is promoting rapid change to the industry, one might think that this relationship needs openness and a sense of collaboration more than ever. But of course, there always needs to be distance between regulators and licensees when needed. But some have criticised the Commission for a lack of distance, for being too close to the industry and too lenient to some licensees who've entered into voluntary settlements following compliance shortcomings, when perhaps something harsher may have been expected. It may be that the Commission's approach is about to change. The recent consultation document that I mentioned, published a couple of weeks ago, was published on the 26th of January. And you will see the title of it at the foot of this slide. I'll come on to the putting the consumer first a bit later. Amongst other things, it proposes changes in the way in which the Commission proceeds with enforcement actions. A presumption of voluntary settlements has been replaced by quite the opposite. Some of the language being used by the Commission would indicate a shift towards a more adversarial future for the industry. There have been a number of instances in the last few years where large gambling operators have demonstrated shortcomings in their compliance procedures, which have enabled criminals to spend money with such operators. Such investigations were generally, not always, but generally conducted in a spirit of openness, and they led to voluntary settlement, and crucially, they required the operator in question to conduct an industry education process. industry learning was undeniably helpful for everybody, including the Commission. However, to the extent that a culture of voluntary settlement was ever considered to be an amnesty, it would seem from the latest language that it may be over. This puts operators in a tricky position. What happens if they spot a serious issue? Do they take the cue from the Commission's November speech and alert the Gambling Commission, enter into a dialogue, investigate internally, and then revert back to the Gambling Commission with how it happened and what they're going to do to make sure that it doesn't happen again? That would always help the Commission understand the challenges that operators faced, and undeniably help the industry itself with the guidance that came out of that. My fear, however, is that going forward, some in the industry will focus more on the more recent, relatively aggressive statements and simply remain quiet. With respect to not only a licensing review, but also for people's personal positions to be considered as personal management license holders, my fear is that the relationship built on spirit openness is in danger of being replaced by one of confrontation. And at a time of rapid change, it would seem that the relationship of openness could be at risk. As mentioned earlier, there are a number of areas identified by the Commissioner which are generally seen by other regulators or law enforcement bodies that are subject to focus on subjects of, as she would say, for need for improvement. I'd just like to consider two of those which are taking up a lot of people's time in this room at the moment, relating to consumer rights and AML, each highly complex areas of law and regulation. Just a few weeks prior to the Commission's speech in November, a press release emerged, came pretty much out of nowhere, from the Competition and Market Authority here in the UK, instigating an investigation into the way the gambling industry contracts with its customers. For those unfamiliar with the CMA, it's a statutory watchdog here in the UK, which oversees all business relationships with consumers. It has taken steps in the past to fundamentally change some business practices in an array of industries, including grocers, brewers, financial services, banks. What was news to some of the gambling industry is that the consumer legislation carries with it certain criminal penalties for breach. This is something that the CMA rightly pointed out in its press release in October and in this quote. This is an investigation that is going to have an impact, and the uncertainty is certainly causing concern. When one thinks about customer terms and conditions, they are in effect a regular contract, albeit one that has implied into an array of protections in favour of the consumer. There is a general theme emerging from the CMA's investigation, known to be one where it's taking issue with situations where gambling operators purport to provide some form of benefit or value to a customer, but then, for an array of reasons, may either withhold that benefit entirely or restrict the player's ability to enjoy it. It's a central plank of consumer rights law that businesses cannot, generally, unilaterally change the terms of their contracts with their customers. That's fairly obvious. There are four main areas of focus for the CMA's investigation, which are up on the slide here, and I'm just going to very briefly talk about them. Promotions is something which I think we're all aware that the multitude of advertising adjudications by our advertising regulator in the UK, which has upheld numerous complaints around this issue, around how related terms and conditions that customers have signed up to may have qualifying deposits or very difficult terms and conditions to actually digest. And then a customer will complain that they've not somehow received the benefit of the bonus that they were expecting, or there's been some form of terms and conditions applied to their bonus that they weren't expecting. Now, the complexity of bonus terms and conditions reflects the sophistication of bonus abusers that the industry knows very well about, and that the CMA, we hope, is rapidly learning about. The sophistication of bonus abuse and the steps that operators can reasonably be expected to take is clear to the industry, but we're in the hopes that the regulators now are beginning to understand that. Without being able to take such steps, and without being able to check such behaviour, then the industry will be in a very different position. Palpable error rules, obvious error rules, is a pretty complex area, but actually goes to the very heart of what the CMA is trying to review. The Consumer Rights Act contains what's called a grey list. Grey list provisions are terms within a contract that prima facie could be considered unfair unless they're clearly presented in an understandable way by the customer. Palpable error rule really works in a way which potentially restate the basis of the contract or the individual wager that the punter's actually entered into. The assessment of a palpable error rule is pretty complex, as I say. You really need to understand the intricacies of bookmaking and risk management generally to appreciate why you have such rules. Of course, the days when the lad in the betting shop would write up the wrong odds on the blackboard, those days are gone. But bookmakers do make mistakes. Odds are sometimes incorrectly published. The sophistication of customers nevertheless seeking to exploit some of these mistakes in bookmakers' pricing can lead to what at first appears to be fairly dramatic responses by the operators, but once you understand what really sits behind it, you can see that they perhaps do have a point. I mean the operators rather than the CMA. However, once it's understood what the threats are for businesses, I'm going to visit some pretty interesting conversations, I think, between the CMA and the industry going forward in the next few months. The third there is breaches. It's a very wide term, actually, but you can have a situation where customers are themselves alleged to be in breach of the terms and conditions. And the corresponding benefits of any wager or benefit that they could be, believe that they could be entitled to, are then denied to them. Again, operators in the room will understand this very well. There's often a lot more to these situations than meets the public eye. And any half-decent operator is not just going to refuse to pay out people. There'll always be a reason. And they'll do so if customers try and mislead them by masking their identities or opening multiple accounts and some such like. And the other one there is complaints, which I'm not sure is actually going to be a big focus of the CMA, but there is one area that they are looking into is the way in which customers actually handle complaints with their customers, and whether they genuinely seek them, give them some form of redress, or actually whether the process is so complicated to remove the benefit of the customer process entirely. In my view, what's particularly interesting about the CMA investigation is it does appear that there's a wanted challenge to what we understand the industry standards to be. A number of the provisions that the Commission, the CMA, and indeed the Gambling Commission are looking at have been in customer terms and conditions for a long time now. And no single operator is likely to depart from them unless there is an industry-wide initiative to require them to do so. And this may well be the output of the CMA's investigation. There's a wholesale review of the way the industry operates with its customers, and there is a review correspondingly of this industry standard. Clear guidance, we would think, will follow from this, but we don't quite know what the actual more immediate output is going to be from the CMA. No one knows whether there will be enforcement, sanctions, or simply industry guidance. But one thing is clear, and the CMA have made this very clear, they have identified an imbalance in the way in which the operators contract with their customers, and they are seeking to redress it. I just wanted to touch pretty briefly on one other area of law which troubles me, potentially when you're faced with a more aggressive regulator, which is around the process of crime and AML, an extremely difficult area. But I certainly see clouds on the horizon here. There continues to be difficulties, I think, around what it means to adopt a risk-based approach in terms of assessing money laundering risk, how operators respond to suspicion in relation to their customer activities, and the corresponding actions they must then take. Anti-money laundering is an inexact science, and the law recognises that. I don't mean the Gambling Act, I mean the Proceeds of Crime Act recognises that. Operators will always be targets of sophisticated and deceptive individuals. I think the battleground is going to be around source of income issues. Does it necessarily follow that if a customer will not disclose to you the source of their income, that you must have a corresponding suspicion as to the genesis of it? Not necessarily. Does it naturally follow, in the absence of that customer giving you information that you request, that you must terminate your relationship with them? Not necessarily. These are tricky questions. And an operator can have appropriate policies and procedures in place, and still someone could get through. The Proceeds of Crime Act and money laundering regulations have built into them a degree of tolerance that accepts perfection in AML. It's impossible. The Gambling Commission's future interpretation of the Proceeds of Crime Act also needs to build in these tolerances. And I do envisage a day where it sanctions an operator for breaches of gambling regulation in the context of their money laundering requirements, where coherent arguments can be run that there was no Proceeds of Crime offence at all. It's quite interesting yesterday in a session that I think some of you were in, where a representative from the Gambling Commission was asked about this interplay between the Proceeds of Crime Act and the gambling legislation, and acknowledged that actually the Gambling Commission could potentially come to a different conclusion than the police, albeit that they would work with one another. Of course, if somebody's P&L is on the line or significant fine is on the line, one could see that these are the seeds of the potential disputes in the future. The remainder of the talk, I want to talk about a couple of statements that came out of this aforementioned consultation, where the Gambling Commission is looking to update their approaches to enforcement. It's important to remember the Gambling Commission, as a regulator, has boundaries to its power. The Hansen principles, which my colleague Jason is very fond, was followed by a government review in 2005, so 12 years ago now, and it looks at regulators generally and the way in which regulators should interact with their charges. And it certainly expects regulators to identify and manage risk, but also to do so in a way that allows businesses to succeed. The Commission acknowledges this in their principles of licensing and regulation. A more recent expression of the government's view of regulators is the Regulators Code 2014, which clearly acknowledges the need to support economic growth. Again, the Commission tips its cap to the Regulators Code in the statement of principles for licensing and regulation. Yet as part of the changes of its enforcement principles, or suggested changes to its enforcement principles, the Commission suggested amendments to those statements. Now, the Gambling Act requires the Commission to review principles of regulation from time to time, so that's fair enough for them to do that. But the Act also clearly bestows on them a statutory obligation to pursue the licensing objectives, and that's at the heart of their whole entire regulatory scope. Keeping gambling crime-free, keeping gambling fair and open, protecting the vulnerable and minors. The licensing objectives, as they're known in Section 1 of the Gambling Act, are central to the principles of licensing and regulation and provide the foundation for the Commission's entire existence. So why is the Commission seeking to augment its licensing principles with phrases such as driver culture where operators put consumers first? I don't really know what this means. And I think it's very important that the industry during this consultation period tries to work out itself and then enters dialogue with the Commission to try and understand what this actually means. It may be innocuous. It may be stating the obvious. You're a business, you should put your customers first. But there may be a deeper meaning to it. I don't know. Perhaps a more interesting statement made in the consultation document at the very beginning states that gambling consumers in Britain should have trust and confidence that they will get the best prices. Again, I'm not quite sure what this means either. But it does lead me to wonder what's coming down the pipes. The Gambling Commission and any regulator need to provide a safe, fair, open environment with which consumers can trade with the relevant business. However, let's assume for a second that the CMA investigation deals with any consumer rights issues. Let's assume the ASA issues are dealt with. Let's assume the Information Commissioner issues are dealt with. Let's assume that all the things that Sarah Harrison mentioned in the original slide about quickening the pace of change are dealt with. Let's assume the industry is generally compliant. At that point, does the Commission's role stop? Has the Commission done their job at that point? Does a requirement to put the consumer first and offer them best prices suggest the regulators now positioning themselves to have a say on the underlying commercial relationship between customers and operators? Gambling is regulated due to the risks it poses, and the regulator's role is to address those risks. I'm not convinced that the role that extends to have any impact at all on the pure commercials is appropriate for a regulator. The Gambling Commission is not the market maker. To do so would seem to contradict some of the Hansen principles and the regulator's code that the Commission is bound by. Indeed, that apparent stance may contradict a statement made previously by the Gambling Commission, and that still remains on its website today. There is no right to bet. Gambling businesses do not have to transact with people. They can decide who they transact with and on what terms. I do accept that there's a difference to some of the issues that the CMA may be alluding to, where an operator enters into a transaction and then, for whatever reason, unilaterally seeks to amend the terms of that transaction. However, the Commission realises that the states themselves and the gambling industry is entitled to manage its business as it sees fit, assuming it's compliant. And I hope the Commission remembers that when they finalise their statements of principle around how they seek to enforce regulations going forward. David Bowie for those. The gambling industry, particularly the remote gambling industry of the UK, is at a crossroads. It's been just over 2 years since the gambling industry went from regulating almost no gambling operators to regulating almost all of them. And their learning curve has been pretty rapid. The Commission has spotted shortcomings in the way it feels the industry is performing, and it needs them to seek to address those quickly. Any consultation that comes out from the Commission must be assessed by the industry and responded to. Where the Commission seeks input from the industry, it must give it, and do so in a sophisticated and coordinated way. In my view, the latest consultation, which looks at to restate the principles by which the Commission regulates and enforces, is probably the most important consultation we've had for a while. So don't ignore it. We've got a clear desire in the regulator's mind to change things, and fast. There's an apparent toughening of the regulator's stance. There's more attention being paid to the industry, not just by the Commission, but by other regulatory bodies. And there's a perception the regulator's remit may be broadening and in a more aggressive way. Thank you.